suddenly I was rushing around the house like a headless chicken. It was that frustration, mild despair.
Yeah.
Of, oh, here we go again.
How useful is that when you are next late, potentially?
Which, of course, I wouldn't ever be.
Well, I know you know this.
I know you know I know.
But, you know, just because we're coaches and NLP practitioners and everything doesn't mean that we don't still do these things to ourselves.
That was trickier. Got there, but it's tricky. And it was also, do I want to go here in a public forum? Yeah, why not? Because that's what we do.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Carrie. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. So how has your week been?
Well, funny you should ask. You know how you said, oh, I still have ADHD?
Yeah.
I've had a bit of a wake-up call, shall we say.
Oh, have you? So what's happened?
Well, a bit of background. I've been working long and hard over the last couple of years, focusing on dealing with an issue that I have that is a very common ADHD one, which is getting out of the house on time without panicking. So what I've managed to do over the years is to get out of the house on time pretty much all the time. But headless and chicken spring to mind.
Okay.
And running round and racing round and going out and then remembering the umpteen things that, even though I've left everything on the stairs, all in a lump with my car keys and my phone, somehow there's always something that means I have to come back in.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've managed to do is lasso all that over the last and feel quite proud of myself, reframing things and all sorts of things, which means that most of the time, would you believe, I get places early. Who knew? I know. So that's all going terribly well. And there's a postscript to all that. But for the time being, that's the background. So this week, our chorus rehearsal on Tuesday, it was all going beautifully to plan. I had it all timed. I primed my partner and said, I'd really like to be there early if we can, and this, that and the other. Anyway, so I planned to go for a walk and I fitted the walk in. This is for health reasons and it's all good. And then I bumped into a friend's daughter, whom I know quite well, and who's a lovely person.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked how I was, and we started talking about that. And I know they've just moved house, so I felt kind of not obliged, but something in that direction to say, oh, how's it going? And then, of course, she wanted to tell me. And then she asked another question, and it was all very engaging and lovely. And then I suddenly had a shit moment. Time. And so, because of my health condition, I can't run back. So I had to walk quickly. And the result of all that was that I had a bit of a funny turn, which meant I had to sit still for 5 minutes while I recovered.
Mm.
And by the time I'd done all that, guess what?
Late.
I was late. And rushing around the house like a lunatic, trying to get everything done. And my partner was waiting, and it sort of tapped back into the old days, which was disappointing and frustrating. And I was very sweaty. It just wasn't very nice. So I thought, well, never mind, it's a blip. It's fine. And then yesterday, I had an appointment, which is about half an hour's drive away. And, you know, I can't even remember what happened particularly. It was that insignificant. But I got distracted and from being on time, in fact, early.
Mm.
Best laid plans. Suddenly, I was rushing around the house like a headless chicken.
Mm.
And I did get there 2 minutes early, but only just. And as it was, she was running a couple of minutes late, so it didn't matter. But it was that frustration, mild despair.
Yeah.
Of, oh, here we go again. I felt like I'd got a handle on this. Now, as coaches, we know it's not a straight line and all that kind of stuff. But when you've got evidence that things are going much better and you're dealing with something that's dogged you all your life and you're feeling quite proud about it, and then suddenly you have two bits of evidence in the same week that it's not going quite as well as you thought. Dispiriting is the word.
Yeah, I can hear that in your voice. And so I was going to ask you some questions, really, which was about, you said that you used to have a real sort of getting out of the house on time was a real problem, and that you used to sort of end up very panicky and very stressed. And that sounded like that was a, just your norm. Is that correct?
Yes, there's some background to it, but carry on with any questions. So the answer is yes.
And you were often late for things? Or would you get there by the skin of your teeth?
Skin of teeth. Absolute skin of teeth.
Okay. So this may sound like a hollow victory, but you said you arrived at this point of 2 minutes early. So would you not see that as some progress from where you were before? And rather than it being all the time, it is these last two episodes. What I'm asking, I guess, is are you able to see that there has been a shift, a positive shift in this?
Absolutely, yes. So with my adult-wise, sage-like, coachy mind, yes, absolutely. But the thing that was dispiriting is that I was in that stress loop again.
Right.
And with the health condition I have, it's stress-related and so on. So it's triggered when I get stressed. So if you like, I'm not allowed to be stressed, which in itself is stressful. Mm. So having worked pretty hard and used my mind well to create tools and strategies to avoid this happening, for it to happen twice in the week, that's why it was noteworthy.
Mm. Is it the same root cause of the stress this time? So what I mean by that is your stress now driven by frustration that your strategies aren't working compared to what it may have been driven by before?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Good question. As often in these cases, it's a bit of both, I think.
Mm.
Is it okay to give you some background on this?
Yes, for sure.
Okay. My father, as ever, features in this. There's a surprise. Well, you and I both like to go back to sort of root causes of things. And the root cause is that my father was a very angry man. Trigger angry. He'd be whistling 1 minute and then one minor thing would happen or be out of place in the house or whatever. And he'd just go ballistic. So it was a huge amount of uncertainty in my childhood. And so, sorry, I've just got this message that I want to say. Of course, many people have much, much, much worse childhoods than I have. So this is my brain kicking in here. But nonetheless, I did have an uncertain childhood in many ways. So if you weren't ready on time when he wanted to go, this was a potential massive trigger point. And there'd be lots of shouting and occasionally a whack around the head or whatever happened to be. But there was always the threat. So as a little ADHD kid, the threat of this was, and you and I both know that with small T trauma, which this was, it wasn't big T, it's not like a rail crash or something awful, but it was that constant dripping, if you like, like the Chinese water torture. The threat of him, you know, the tinderbox going off or the firework exploding or whatever it was always there. And one of the main triggers was if we were going on holiday or going on a day trip or something like that, going to visit friends of my parents or something, if you weren't ready, then that was a potential, you know, the end of the world. So as an ADHDer, even though we didn't know that then, that I was, it was tricky. And I was hypervigilant, still am. I was hypervigilant because of all this uncertainty. And so the very fact that I would be nervous would mean that I would get emotionally flooded, which would mean that my frontal cortex would get even less of a look in than an ADHD would normally have. And so that would mean that I would end up not able to think clearly. And so I wouldn't be able to think what I needed. And as a little kid, you're less likely to anyway. And this is the pattern. And then I had a partner later on in my life, a while back, who wasn't my father, but got very disgruntled. Let's put it that way. And it tapped me straight back into my father's stuff. So there's some triggers there. And this is why I suppose I'm proud of having dealt with it as well as I have. And yes, you're right. Yes, there is progress, definitely. And it's not so much the slipping back. It's the here we go again-ness.
So it sounds like there are clear triggers and that learned behaviour of there's a consequence to be me being late is the learnt behaviour, and it's a negative consequence, whether it be with your father or your ex-partner. Being late has a negative consequence for you. And now you have a fear of I'm going to fall back into that pattern of behaviour where I am late and panicky and flummoxed and busy because this has happened twice now.
Yes. It's an opportunity for a reset. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
It's a reminder. And that's why we're talking about it, I guess.
Yeah. So I've been doing this really fascinating course, which is based on the sort of autistic brain. But actually, a lot of the things that have come out of this research piece that's been done is that some of the responses that autistic people have is the same response that traumatized people have. Doesn't matter whether it's big T or small T trauma. So for anybody listening, in a nutshell, big T trauma are those things, like Nikki said, those huge life events like a bereavement or significant ongoing abuse, a train crash, an attack, those sorts of things that are really shocking moments.
Going into battle.
Yes.
Yes.
But small T trauma are those, trauma, I've heard a great definition of trauma. It was basically brain indigestion. Mm. And anything that your brain cannot digest or compute or understand becomes a trauma to you. It's something that's unresolved and it's something that your brain can't compute. And therefore, all those small T traumas, they are still affecting your brain and your brain is going, I can't understand this.
Yeah. And also it gets stored in the body. That's the thing. It goes down into your body. There's a somatic thing. So yeah, sorry.
Yes.
Just interject.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. So your whole body has this response to it, which is why people who carry trauma with them have a hypervigilance, certainly in certain circumstances, and physical sensations can trigger even outside of the event that triggered you, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
So that you don't have to actually have the stimulus of the exact trigger. It can be a sensation that you feel within your body that feels like that experience.
Exactly, yeah.
So for a lot of people who are traumatized or also on the autistic spectrum, it's about safety. And essentially, people who are autistic live under a constant state of threat, which is also true for people who have experienced trauma. And so that their fight flight is heightened.
Mm.
So there's a reason for me to say that obviously there is a comorbidity between ADHD and autism anyway.
Yep.
But listening to all these lectures in this course, they were talking about how anxiety can be, just like you explained, you get caught in that loop of it. And so there was an exercise that they were talking about, which is a sort of a brain training method to sort of deal with these sorts of anxieties. So you actually address what that trigger is or what's happening to your thinking, because as we know, our thinking affects our emotional response to things. So the reason why I share all of this is because for a lot of people with ADHD, we hold on to a lot of triggers from, like you're saying, from things in our childhood, things we've struggled with, things that we find really difficult, and have a lot of anxieties about those things. So this method that they talk through is a very, very straightforward one. And I can share that with you if that's something of interest.
Of course, always.
So they were talking about two questions that you can ask yourself that can be really helpful for dealing with this sort of emotional response. And the first one is, am I overestimating the probability of something bad happening?
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about being late now, you're running late and you're panicking and you're triggers are all raised because of your thinking of your dad and your ex-partner and the consequences that there were then, you've got that learned panic trigger response. So the question to ask yourself in the situation now, so for example, being late for chorus, am I overestimating the probability of something bad happening?
Okay.
So that you actually think of what your body is doing in relation to the actual event. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay, so as we're in the same chorus, you know that we're building towards something important at the moment,
mm-hmm.
competing internationally. And so there is an extra sense of responsibility for me, because I have a big waggly responsibility bone about being there on time. And a wonderful director has impressed on us, and assistant director, they want us to be there on time so that we can all start. And there are 37 other people waiting for you. And if you're late, then you interrupt it. And also because I do the Facebook stream. So there is a responsibility bone that if I'm late, which is why I wanted to be early. To answer your question, obviously, rationally, the wise sage, the adult in me, says, it's not the end of the world if you're 5 minutes late. But it's a body response. Yes, obviously, it's the brain at the end of the day, but it's held in the body. And my body wants to panic.
Okay.
I think it's fight and flight. And I think I want to, if I run around fast enough, then I'll get there. And it's that feeling.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I think I understand where they're going with it. And it does make sense. So rationally, yes. But I'm not sure that particular question quite hits the spot.
Okay.
I might be wrong.
No, I understand that. So there's more. There's the second part to it was, am I overestimating how bad it would be if this does happen?
What was the first question again?
Am I overestimating the probability of something bad happening? So am I thinking, oh my gosh, something absolutely awful is going to happen? And the second part is, am I overestimating how bad it would actually be if that did happen?
I'm going to switch to part two yesterday.
Okay.
Because the first one has my responsibility bone tied up. This sort of has yesterday's appointment, but I was paying for yesterday's appointment. The only one it would affect was the physical therapist I was going to see, but she was going to get paid anyway. So the only one who was going to suffer, if you like, was me. So was I overestimating? Possibly yes, yesterday. Because nobody else would be affected. It was just me. And actually, if I was 5 minutes late, it wouldn't matter. And I was telling myself as I was driving there and looking at the sat-nav and thinking, just relax, Nikki, it's fine. I was telling myself that it wouldn't be the end of the world if I were 2-3 minutes late, and she probably wouldn't be quite ready because, you know, the appointment's overrun. And that's exactly what happened. So yes, is the answer to the second one.
So even with regards to being late for chorus and you saying, actually, it's really important, I do need to be there. When you think about what the outcome is going to be, is there a gap between what your rational brain knows is the likely outcome and what your emotional triggered brain is flapping around thinking is the outcome?
Undoubtedly.
So.
Is that good enough?
Yeah. So. No, because that's a good part to get to. And I know this maybe sounds really obvious, but sometimes we don't really stop and articulate this.
Absolutely. Totally.
So the second part of this activity was, after you've asked those questions, was saying, what is my anxious brain actually telling me is going to happen? And you are honest and you say it. So if it's okay to ask you, that time when you're rushing late to chorus, what is your anxious, panicking, triggered brain telling you is going to happen?
I'm thinking, oh, now that's interesting. It's letting people down. It's letting my mum down, who's been dead for 4 years. So I might get a whack around the head from my dad who died 6 years ago or 7 years ago, whatever it was. So obviously that's not actually going to happen. This is me cutting through a lot of, because, you know, I've done lots of work on this sort of stuff. So I'm kind of cutting out a lot of stuff on the way and I'm just going what's coming up in my subconscious. But that's the root, I think.
So even though you were saying, I'm going to get whack from my dad, he's been dead for, you know, for years, it's noting when you stop and are honest with yourself about what is the narrative that is driving this. You said at the beginning, oh, I know it comes from this, but that's very different to stopping and saying, what is the narrative? And so you've just discovered what that narrative is. And once you've expressed what that narrative is, you've got something sort of out there and concrete to look at.
Yes. And I think what's coming up for me is do I want to justify? Interestingly, I want to say, yes, I know all this. So the part of me that thought I was stupid is now saying, you're not stupid. Look, see, I know all this already. So there's a number of things happening at the same time. To take it back to the matter at hand, the obvious actual repercussion would be that I would feel bad and I would judge myself, which fortunately I don't as much as some, but I still do. And the judgment is that I've let people down. So whether I would actually be letting my mum down is another matter. But the feeling was, I mean, my dad didn't hit my mum apart from once, but he would take it out on her. Mm-hmm. So there's a protective thing. This has come up for me before in other circumstances, but I hadn't necessarily linked it directly to this being late thing, because it's a deep visceral thing that I feel. And it's on many levels, as you can tell, because there's the self-judgment, there's the disappointment, there's the, I was feeling so proud of myself and now. But I'm the first to say that if I fall off the wagon with something, it's not a straight line. So I know that as a rational adult. But the little six-year-old is running around the house trying to find things and hello clouds, hello sky, oh, I seem to be in trouble.
Right.
I explained to my wife recently what goes on for me when I'm in this state, because I think understanding builds bridges. And if people understand why you react to certain things, it's not just about your own understanding, it's the people around you, the impact it has on them. And obviously, if I'm late and running around like a lunatic and being panicked and stressed, then I realise that has an impact on people around me, which I don't want either. So there's the judgment comes in again. Is that I just want to be the serene, calm, lovely person that I am on many occasions. I want to be that all the time. I don't want to be this nutter that's running around the house. I want to be a nutter, but not that sort of nutter.
So how useful then is it to rationalize this irrational process so that you can raise your awareness and possibly put the brakes on?
I'm thinking about whether I want to put the brakes on or whether I actually want to release. That's why I stopped to pause for a second, because putting the brakes on felt like shutting down to me. It's like compression, whereas actually releasing. Something's coming up, which I'd completely forgotten. There's one thing about something not happening for a while because you've dealt with it or are dealing with it better, is that I forgot a technique that I use. And this has reminded me, so it's brilliant, which is I checked in with my body. So this is sort of CBT-ish. So a while back, after COVID, after lockdown was wonderful for me in some ways. Obviously, it was awful for lots of people, but I didn't have to go anywhere. So this didn't come up. I didn't have to get ready to go anywhere because there wasn't anything to go to. You weren't allowed. So there was that. So when lockdown stopped and we were allowed to go out again, I noticed that this came up with knobs on, if you like. It was quite pointy because it's like, oh, we're going out again. So that's when I decided I needed to solve it or come up with ways to deal with it better. So one day I was early. I was 10 minutes early. I knew I was 10 minutes early. There was a clock there or a phone telling me I was 10 minutes early, and I was about to walk out the door with my keys and everything else, and I still felt this churning. So even though I was on time, in fact, I was early, I felt like I wasn't. So I stopped and I checked in with my body, and I realised that my stomach muscles were really tight. I was pulling my tummy in a lot. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. Didn't realise that. Okay. So I just literally relaxed them as we're taught to at singing. Just, you know, don't worry about your tummy sticking out. Just let it go. And all the butterflies went, all the churning went. So I forgot that yesterday.
It sounds like there's two prongs to this. One is the strategies and the preventative measures that you have in place. So you said, you know, I put all these things on the stairs. I plan to leave early. I do. So you've put everything in place. So that's the sort of practical element to it. And, you know, maybe that's a topic for another occasion, actually talking about the strategies and processes that we put in place just to help us get through the day and do things on time. But for the purpose of this conversation, because you described knowing you know what to do about it, it seems to me that the difficulty is how to deal with that in the moment. So that in the moment feeling, you've described another one, thinking of the somatic impact on you, checking in with your body and, you know, relaxing your stomach muscles or remembering to breathe. For a lot of people, it's just like you've gone to shallow breath data. So the deep breath. But then your thinking, even if it's subconscious, drives your response. And so that irrational thinking and that subconscious thinking when you're late is going, I'm going to be in trouble. I'm letting my mum down. There's trouble here. I'm letting people down.
Sure.
That's the narrative that's going on in your head. What is the reality? So let's use the example of being late for chorus. The narrative in your head, which is leading to that experience in your body in the state of panic, is I'm letting my mum down, and link to that very much emotional past. But what is the reality in that situation? What would the actual consequence in practical terms be if you had been, let's say you were 5 minutes late?
I would miss possibly the recording that I needed to do. Don't know, 5 minutes, possibly not. I might get a look.
Okay, yeah.
Looks are actually quite, I talk about this with my clients. It's the look. And we know what we mean by the look.
Yeah, yeah.
And it might be because you've interrupted somebody or whatever. And somebody's looking at you in the WTF way, like, you know, what?
Yes.
And when you've jumped in and said too much or you've whatever. So there's the look, which we know what we mean and we try and avoid. So there is that. So in practical terms, the look, which at the end of the day, isn't the end of the world. So to answer your question, probably not a lot.
Let's go into that. So there's already this difference between narrative.
Yes, and reality.
Reality, actually, when you came down and we took your feelings,
yes,
which were then driving that narrative still, mm, the actual fact was, I might get a look.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
So then the follow-up question is, how could you deal with that?
What if it happened, or the thought of it?
Yeah, if it happened. So you've said, actually, the reality is I might get a look. So what would you do if that happened?
Okay.
How would you deal with it?
I would, if the circumstance allowed, as in not wanting to interrupt somebody, I would prophylactically apologize to avoid the book happening. I preempt it.
Mm-hmm.
And I might do that with somebody I know well by mouthing it at them so I didn't interrupt too much. Sorry. You know, that kind of thing. How else would I deal with it? Well, obviously, there's the internal side of things, what's going on, the narrative, and talk myself through it. And actually, part of me would feel it's justified. The look would be justified.
Okay.
So I'll take it on the chin. I'm not a big beater up of myself generally, but when I know that I've done something that is not ideal, I'd like to say I'm the first to say I messed up there and I didn't live up to what I would have hoped I would have done there. Sometimes there's a reason for it. Sometimes I just get distracted. You know, it goes with the territory.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot more understanding of myself in that respect these days. Nothing else is popping up.
Okay. So when we take emotion, which drives our feelings out of it, mm-hmm, the most likely way that that would have realistically panned out is, assuming you'd arrived 5-10 minutes late, you may have got a look. You would have had a strategy to deal with that where you would have mouthed sorry and probably held your hands up, spoken to the person about it afterwards and say, gosh, sorry about that. I'm really sorry I was late. And then, because you're not using your word, a big beater upper of yourself, that would have been the end of it.
Mm.
So you played that forward logically. You've come up with what logically would probably happen, how you would deal with it, and what the outcome moving forward would be. How useful is that in the context of your situation when you are next late, potentially?
Which, of course, I wouldn't ever be.
Well, but everybody runs late at times, don't they?
Yes, yes.
Best laid plans, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
So in a situation, you know you've got all the strategies in place, preventative, somatic, in the moment things to help you deal with it. But how useful is it to know that there is a narrative driving this that doesn't really bear much resemblance to reality?
Yes, is the answer. Yes, it is. It's useful. I think I've got a resistance.
Okay.
What's the resistance?
I have a question about the resistance.
Go, shoot.
What do you gain by reacting in the way you currently react in the panic zone?
Oh, nothing whatsoever. That's an easy one.
Okay. I wondered if there was something that actually you feel there is a gain that you don't want to let go of.
No, absolutely not on that one, because it's not serving me. It's actually the opposite completely.
Okay.
And I know we usually when somebody replies this quickly, you think, that's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. But actually, I think I'm pretty clear on that. I might be wrong, but that's how it feels.
Okay.
There's a resistance to embracing it because I think the young child in me is doing that. I know all this thing.
Okay.
And it's obviously I haven't been using it as much as I might. And the bit about, so when we look at stuff with clients and we look at the evidence, which is incredibly useful. See, look, I've just gone into professional mode. I can feel it now. I feel on much firmer ground. And I was feeling wobbly a couple of minutes ago, which is really interesting, watching myself. So let's just see if I can mix the two together. So the coach in me is thinking, yes, I do this with clients all the time. Oh, there's a, you should know better. You should have known this already. And I did, but this has pulled it to the front. Thank you.
Well, I know you know this.
I know you know I know.
But that doesn't mean that we, you know, just because we're coaches and NLP practitioners and everything doesn't mean that we don't still do these things to ourselves.
Of course. And that's what we're about here. This is
absolutely.
Okay. So this is what we're doing here is we're being vulnerable, which is why I've been quiet on occasion and thought about stuff and processed things because I wanted to know what was going on underneath. And there is that, it's almost like I'm trying to keep my head above the water.
Okay.
So this is some other stuff that's come up, but it's to do with my brother being genius level and so on, and me feeling stupid as a child. So that's a different, it's all part of the same thing, but it's a different aspect that maybe we'd deal with some other time. I mean, looking at the evidence, the actual repercussions, yes, I think, as I said, the yesterday's experience was, if you like, simpler. Because also at Chorus, I'm deputy section leader, so I have a responsibility that's over and above just being a member of the Chorus, if you like, just as you have certain responsibilities now within the Chorus and so on. And when you're on the management side of things, it feels worse if you're late somehow. It's like you're letting the side down with extra bits. So for me, there's a lot tied up to do with my values. Whereas yesterday it was just me and the therapist and I've paid for it. And if I was 5 minutes late, well, that's my tough luck. So it wasn't quite as bad, if you see what I mean.
I do see what you mean. I think I would just link it back to the issue with Chorus, because I think that's a really good example of a situation where you feel that sense of obligation. And maybe that is what triggers it more than just I'm running a bit late for something. But actually, there is an element whereby, A, your friends and everybody knows you and the struggles that you have with ADHD, as they do with me, and people make allowances for it and understand that. But B, actually, you're not usually late. So if you take the sort of 80-20 principle to things, most of the time you're late. So if there is a blip, people will see it as a blip rather than your norm, but you're seeing it as your norm.
Okay, so this brings me to part two, which is, I think the reason that I felt disappointed this week and everything else I felt yesterday was that I had a conversation with my wife and a good friend of ours recently. And I'd left my credit card in a shop and they were sitting in the car and I couldn't find the credit card and I didn't know where it was. It's classic ADHD, you know, you think, oh, where's it gone? Panic. And I got back to the car and I can't even remember where the credit card was. It was probably in the car. And they'd had to wait, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes for me. And when we got back to the house, they were sort of saying, oh, you know, I can't remember the ins and outs of it because it was a little while ago. But I felt, and this is my feeling, I felt judged. I felt misjudged. I'm feeling quite tearful thinking about it now. And we subsequently had some conversations about this where I said, yes, I am sometimes a bit scatty. Yes, I do forget things. But you do know the situation now. You know that I have ADHD going on and I deal with it pretty well most of the time. But, you know, I'm going to have a blip. I'm going to have a blip here and there. And then I go into a panic. This ties back to my father again. It was him waiting in the car, would have been, yeah. So I said, I'm trying to deal with that and keep a clear head and think and not panic. And most of the time I'm doing pretty well. And I feel like you're not giving me the credit for what I have done in the last couple of years and how far I have come. And we had a couple of supplementary conversations. I had one with my wife and then I went around to see my friend and we had some illuminating conversations. I said, what perhaps you don't realise is that when I'm rushing around like a headless chicken, I'm not the business professional who's worked for myself and been a creative director and all the other things I've been. I'm a six-year-old in my little red shoes with my white socks on. I'm the little curly-haired, bubbly little kid. That's where I go. And if you could perhaps understand that at some level, that might help you cope when I am causing you delays. And I hate the impact it has on you. That's one of the reasons one of the main things is letting other people down. It's that again. I think as ADHDers, I've written here, we might be coaches, but we still need encouragement from those we care about and who care about us. And that level of understanding is massively important. And communicating effectively with our nearest and dearest and our friends and everybody else is so important to see if we can help them understand, because they don't live in our heads. They really don't understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that, Nikki, because I think it's really important. And actually, you know, that's trauma, isn't it, as well, on every level, where the when we react in a certain way, we're the young child us who responds in that way. And that's not just ADHD, that's everybody.
Yes.
But people don't necessarily know or appreciate or understand that. And I think you're right, communicating that and being able to ask for support and say to our loved ones, actually, how we are does impact others. But to be able to talk, you know, I know that talking to my husband and saying, I find this really difficult. And in fact, you know, he listened to the first episode and was like, oh my gosh, I really feel like I learned a lot about your brain from listening to it.
Yes, absolutely. So can I say one more thing about my friend?
Yeah.
My friend has a really strong value of respect. And when I was late, if I was a few minutes late with her to meet up for a walk or something, she was interpreting that as me not respecting her, which is so far from the truth. And once she understood better about the ADHD, and this has been a process over a few years with us, we now say, I'll meet you around about two or ish. And we try to make it sort of a joke between us and looser. And I'll text you when I'm leaving the house and that kind of thing, rather than it being, because I'd feel the pressure, which would mean that I'd go into a bit of a funk, which would mean that I wouldn't think clearly, so I forget things, and therefore I'd be even later. And so we've kind of met in the middle, I think, about that one. So it's useful to know what's going on for the other party.
Definitely. Because we're all, you know, we all have our values. We all have, and it's like love languages, isn't it? How we communicate our love and how we see it communicated to us can be very, very different from person to person.
Totally.
So I suppose to wrap this up, it's about being honest and communicating with ourselves about the reality of what's going on for us and thinking through, being able to press pause and stop the narrative that's the six-year-old child.
Absolutely.
And train ourselves to go, okay, that was then, but now as a year old, the reality is this. And actually, how would I deal with it? Okay, I've got this now.
Can I amend one word in everything you've just said?
Yeah.
You said about being honest with yourself. To me, it's about being curious. Because being honest suggests that you weren't being before. And for me, it's about looking at it from a different point of view, getting a different, reframing.
Yeah.
Different perspective.
Yeah.
Because It's not about, for me, it's not about being honest, because I like to think that's a starting point, really, if you want to look at yourself. It's more that curiosity. And when you ask the questions, and I got the resistance out of the way, the wisdom access, as they say. And yes, you could say, oh, there's all this in between. But actually, if I go back to root cause or potential root cause, it was that interesting, that thing that came into my mind, my subconscious brought up, which was about letting my mum down, or protecting my mum, actually. Mm. It's protecting my mum.
And I think that's, I understand what you mean about the wordy. I think that's what I meant by honesty, that sometimes
yes.
you were honest enough to go through the superficial level and get to the actually what's really going on here bit. Mm. And I think sometimes we can be too quick to miss that stage, is what I mean, that we sort of rush on and go,
yes, absolutely.
Oh, I'm just busy. Yeah. Yes, it stresses me. But actually to stop and use curiosity and honesty and say, actually, this is what really is happening here. This is what the narrative is. And this is the reality of the situation. And then being able to communicate that with other people.
Yeah. The bit where I was honest and when I stopped before I did it was about the resistance.
Mm.
The yes, I know that. I know that already.
Yes. Yeah.
That was the bit that I had to be honest about. The bit about my mum was the curious bit.
Mm.
So it's about being vulnerable.
Mm.
And I love being vulnerable. But if being vulnerable means that people will see that, you know, I've been stupid or I didn't know that. And it, that plumbs into the, I mean, I'm doing that voice on purpose.
Mm.
Then that was trickier.
Mm.
Got there. But it's tricky.
Mm.
And it was also, do I want to go here in a public forum? Yeah, why not? Because that's what we do.
Thank you, Nikki. It's been a really good conversation. Thank you for being so honest about something that I think will resonate with lots of people listening. And hopefully the sort of process that we've talked through may be of use or interest to people as well. But they'll definitely have learned from just hearing you. So thank you, Nikki.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing the questions and the things you've learnt. And as ever, it's been an interesting twisty-turny voyage of discovery.
Oh, well, thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us on our ADHD journey. If you can spare a sec, a review or ranking would be hugely appreciated by us. 5 stars would be marvellous, but whatever you think. Every single one really does help. As well as on your favourite app, you can find us on YouTube and Instagram at the ADHD Connection _podcast. So we hope to see you on there. Thanks again for listening, and bye for now.